Hello and welcome to the London Philharmonic Orchestra's December podcast. I'm Edward Seckerson. This month I'm investigating the orchestra's Wenger Ensemble. And since it's the season of giving and receiving, picking out a couple of my favourite CD releases on the LPO's own label. On Wednesday the 2nd of December, the London Philharmonic Orchestra will be performing at the legendary Vortex Jazz Club. Not the classical symphony orchestra we normally see at the Royal Festival Hall, but an ensemble made up of musicians from the orchestra sitting side by side with thoroughbred jazz musicians to perform a fusion of jazz and classical styles. But this is just one form that the orchestra's incredibly flexible Wenger Ensemble takes. And to find out more, I spoke to its director, Scott Stroman. Scott Stroman, you are the director of the LPO's Wenger Ensemble, an ensemble that clearly crosses boundaries. Tell us a little bit about it. When was it formed? Why?
Yes, well, Wenger was formed 6 years ago, initially out of a combination of projects. One was the old Roots days that used to happen at the South Bank, where they would mix all kinds of combinations of styles and different artists and so forth during the day, crossing boundaries into other types of music besides classical music. Mm-hmm. Another was the work that the orchestra was already doing in workshopping, that is, with its own members working on other styles of music, such as in improvisation, with rhythmic styles, with dance music, with street music, all kinds of other types of music. Mm. And the third thing was the idea of trying to create a sustainable ensemble that would explore this music for the benefit of the members of the orchestra, and also to try and generate some new music, some new musical styles that an orchestra could be involved in performing in the 21st century. The actual spark plug for it was a concert that we did with Youssou N'Dour, the great African singer, for Kurt Masur's arrival weekend. And this was a great event where the orchestra was divided into two orchestras, one working with myself and Youssou N'Dour, and the other one working with Herbie Hancock. And then in the evening, Kurt Masur conducted the whole orchestra in Scheherazade. So the idea was to show the breadth of the orchestra. And this was such a success with the players and presumably with the audience that the then director of the orchestra said, let's create a full-time, an ongoing ensemble to pursue this music. And hence that's it.
Yeah, Kurt Masur is a bit of a jazz fanatic, isn't he, on the quiet?
He is,
or
actually.
Not so on the quiet, actually.
Yes, and so I understand Yurovsky is as well. So there's always been an interest in the LPO in quality music, whether it was classical or world music, if you like, or jazz. So it's been a natural outgrowth of work which is already going on within the orchestra for a long time.
Okay, tell us about the name. It sounds, the sound of it, as though it has Japanese connotations.
It does. It wasn't coined by me, but it's an apt title because Wenger is a type of Japanese poetry to which you continually add without subtracting from what you have. And so the idea of this ensemble was not to do something that was outside the experience of the players in the orchestra or the music of the orchestra, but to add to it so that we took the skills that the players already had. Mm-hmm. And we've expanded that by using those skills to collaborate with musicians from outside the classical spectrum. And that's the way we've added our skills. We've done it by doing concerts with musicians where we'd spend time with them, learning about their style of music, their tradition, and so forth, and then creating new arrangements sometimes collaborating totally by ear in the style of their music. So we're really immersing ourselves in their music and then trying to come up with a genuine collaboration to perform it. And that's the idea of Wenger.
First of all, give us an idea who actually plays in the ensemble. Is it a flexible shape or size? Or?
It is a flexible shape. It tends to be about 15 players, though sometimes it's been as large as a chamber orchestra of 50 players, in fact, when we worked with Youssou N'Dour. Sometimes as small as 3 or 4 players. It depends on the project, on the artist, and the type of collaboration that they'd like to have. But in essence, it's about, a dozen or 15 players who've been involved in lots of projects over the years.
One of the things that people outside the business might be fascinated by is how highly trained classical musicians can further push their boundaries and what new skills they can learn. I mean, you mentioned improvisation. It's been said before that the greatest discipline gives you the greatest freedom.
Yes,
and
quite.
Improvisation presumably is something you can't teach anybody.
Absolutely. You can just provide an opportunity for it to take place, really. And you hit the nail on the head there by saying that we have this highly trained group of wonderful musicians. And at the heart of any great musician our great musical skills, you know, great ears, you know, ability to hear things, great internal sense of rhythm and understanding of form. And all those things are put into practice to a greater or lesser extent in any sort of music. Mm-hmm. Now, in the music that we perform, there's a larger element of improvisation, which means that the players have a little bit more control over those things than they might be if they're sitting in the violin section, or even if they're the principal oboe in the LPO. So it gives them a certain amount of artistic freedom and expression. And what we've tried to do in this group is not try to put them into a package. That is not force them to sound like Charlie Parker playing jazz, or like, indeed, Yusu and Dur's drummers, but to take their existing skills and allow them to be expanded in a personal way, so they sound like themselves. Mm. And this is one of the most intriguing things to me, that when we're doing music that does contain an element of improvisation, of course, the players are, in some cases, are off in the deep end. They're in an area that's unfamiliar to them, and they're constantly asking, am I doing the right thing? Does this sound? Is this what you want? Mm. And I'm amazed by those sorts of questions, because I just think they sound great.
Easy to recruit players? I mean, do you find there is a keenness to experiment within classical music?
There are some players, of course, in the orchestra who, though they are sitting in a classical orchestra, they already have these skills. So we have some tremendous traditional musicians, for example. One of our fiddlers has a great history of playing Irish traditional music. We have several very good jazz musicians who just happen to be making a living, if you like, in the London Philharmonic Orchestra. But actually, they already have the skills that we're talking about here. And we have others. The percussionists are a great example, who, of course, have trained themselves in a very wide variety of genres. And they, for them, it's a kid in a toy store, because instead of just doing what they do very, very well day in and day out at the timpani or on the xylophone or whatever they do within the orchestra, they have the opportunity to play drum kit, African percussion, South American percussion instruments and so forth that they're actually highly trained on but have very little opportunity to play. So those players it's very easy to recruit them. To those who aren't so used to doing this sort of music, yes, there's sometimes a little bit of apprehension, and the way we get over that is by doing workshops that where there's no pressure on performance, but there's an opportunity just to try things out, dip your toe in the water, experience something in a really fun and supportive environment, and then see where it leads.
You've mentioned a number of different genres already in passing. What have been your favorite projects with the orchestra and favorite kind of fusions?
Well, I'd put this in two categories. One category is the sort of fun, you know, the excitement, the experimentation. Those projects have been ones that have been the most improvised, the ones where you didn't know what was going to come out at the end, the ones where you take great risks and sometimes have great disasters. Those are the projects that I find the most, in a way, intriguing to do. On the other hand, the projects that I would say are most successful are the ones where there was a terrific end product. Sometimes an existing one, like when we gave the UK premiere of Miles Davis, Gil Evans' Birth of the Cool, in collaboration with jazz musicians. That was an ideal scenario because we had great orchestral players who understood the style of the music, respected the style of music, played it rhythmically beautifully, and were playing instruments that the music was actually composed for, such as French horn and woodwinds and so forth. On the other hand, some of the other ones that were like this were the great project we did with June Tabor, the folk singer, was a new song cycle which she composed and then was arranged specifically for the ensemble by Hugh Warren, her pianist, who'd worked with us over a number of years. So he knew all the players before he started, and he wrote a piece, a song cycle, that was tailored for the individuals of the group with levels of improvisation and specific little solos for each of the players that sort of accentuated their personality. And that was a huge success in every sense, artistically, musically, socially, in every way. So actually, the things that are the most fulfilling have been those sorts of projects where there's a bit of a lead time, people get to know each other, there's an element of pre-existing music, but in the end, the music is tailored specifically for the ensemble. And we've done this on numerous occasions. I've written a large suite I called it Suite for Jazz Brass, but in fact it was a mixture of jazz and classical, if you like, players. So I wrote a large suite, same thing. I knew all the players. I knew exactly what they sounded like, what they enjoyed playing, what they felt good about, and I could tailor a suite just for them. And we've had about half a dozen of these sorts of large-scale projects which have grown up over a period of time by collaboration. That really is exciting.
And where it hasn't worked, I mean, why hasn't it worked?
Well, I don't think it hasn't worked. I think a disaster is not necessarily something that doesn't work. I mean, we find this in a jazz club all the time, that when you really go off the deep end, you discover absolute treasures, but you also have to take the risk. They let down the safety net, and sometimes the music doesn't click. And so in those more improvised things, once in a while a piece of music isn't as successful or fulfilling as you might have expected. But the next one might be far greater than the boundaries that you would put on it if there was a safety net there. Mm-hmm. So it's a nature of the music, and I enjoy going to performances like that. I love going to risky performances, and as I work as a conductor as well, I'm a real risk taker as a conductor.
Yeah. Yeah,
and some players love this, and many really don't like it. They really want to be absolutely sure that nothing could possibly go wrong, and you'll do the same thing you've done every time. And I can't live like that.
No, that's the excitement of any art form.
Absolutely,
isn't it?
Yes.
Yeah, a little bit further.
Yes, we should say something about this here, too, because one of the ideas when the group was created was not just about the music that we're talking about. It was about the development of the players within the orchestra and taking the things which they would gain from this group back into the main orchestra so that this music would benefit their playing of classical repertoire. So when you go back in and you're doing Beethoven or Mozart, we've done projects on improvising in the styles of Mozart and Beethoven, for example. Mm-hmm. Now when you return to even something as large as a Mozart symphony or a piano concerto or chamber music, whatever it is, there's an element of understanding that comes from working it out in the kind of workshop area that comes back into the orchestra.
There's been quite a strong Indian connection in your work. Tell us a little bit about that over the last few years, and it's going to continue as well.
It is, yes.
Because there's a jazz fusion singer.
Yes, her name. Well, the current group that we're working with is a group called the Karnataka College of Percussion, and the singer you refer to is Ramamani. And this woman is an incredible virtuoso in any sort of genre, but the most intriguing thing about her is that she was the first one nearly 30 years ago to sort of, if you like, cross over and collaborate with Western artists, both classical and particularly jazz. And I was invited to work with her on a totally separate project a couple of years ago, made the connection with her and thought, hey, here's somebody who is of the mindset of our musicians here. What's more, she's someone who really likes to work with musicians that come from other cultures and wants to learn about their music as much as she wants to impart. So one thing led to another, and this project then came together in a rather large ensemble of about 12 people, mostly playing her music, though not all of her music. And the collaboration is with this group, Karnataka College of Percussion, which are her husband, T.A.S. Mani, who's an absolute master percussionist in South Indian music, Ramesh Shotam, who is my original connection with this whole world of music, who is a South Indian musician who lives in Cologne, and then Mike Herting, a piano player in Germany, who's been working with her for many, many years, studied her music, and studied singing and drumming, but for the purposes of helping with the collaboration. So he's the one who's written the arrangements in this case. And so we have this lovely bridge between these South Indian musicians through Mike, who's in Germany, and our musicians. And we previously have done some, as I described earlier, we've done some workshops on the music. So we have a rough idea of how the music works. Of course, you never imagine that you could get anywhere near the kind of level of comprehension that someone who immersed their whole life in the music would have. But that's not the purpose here. The purpose is to understand the basic genre of the music, to have a real feel for it and a respect for it, and allow yourself to be open to using your skills to contribute to it. Mm-hmm. So we've done several projects before with Indian musicians, with the mix sometimes closer toward their music and sometimes closer toward Western classical music. And now we seem to have met perfectly in the middle with a project that just clicked in London last year. And as a result of this being so successful, the orchestra are now sending us on tour to India.
Right. I wonder, has the entire orchestra ever played in India? That Western orchestras there's no tradition of it, is there?
I'm not aware that the orchestra has ever been there. I think this grew out of the idea of sending the whole orchestra to India, and then the thought that, well, perhaps before the whole orchestra goes, we should prepare the ground, as it were. And so not only are we going to be going out there playing what you might call this Indian classical fusion music, but we're also going to be doing performances of straight classical chamber music, making connections with people there, working with people from the conservatories and so forth.
Next gig is on the 2nd of December at the Vortex Jazz Club. Mm-hmm. Tell us about that one.
Well, this one is, we specifically invited some musicians who we've worked with over the years to write music for the ensemble, and this one is very much leaning toward jazz specifically. So we have three people: Stan Sulzman, great tenor saxophone player and composer; Nicky Isles, pianist; Tim Garland, who's been working with Chick Corea and is another saxophone player who's done a lot of work in classical music and jazz; and then myself. And the four of us have written each two pieces that we're going to work on with the ensemble on this occasion. So we've set a lineup. We've decided exactly which players would be involved in this ensemble. It will include those three and myself performing alongside the ensemble. So we have a 12-piece ensemble. And it's going to be new music. And the idea was to create new music for this occasion. So we're not playing anything existing. All of these players, again, know the players in the ensemble. They know their strengths and their weaknesses and what they like to play and what they do well, how to use them well, and they're all fabulous composers.
As we've heard, Renga was created for the orchestra's players. So let's hear what they think about it.
My name's Rachel Gledhill, and I play percussion in the orchestra, and I've been involved in Renga probably from the beginning. And I found it to be challenging, but also using skills that we don't necessarily use that often in the orchestra. So, for instance, I've done some Indian music, some jazz, some samba, and bits of African. We've done gigs in places that we wouldn't normally play in. For instance, we've played in Tower Hamlets in a school, in a few schools in Tower Hamlets, which was quite an experience. And I've done gigs in the Vortex Jazz Club, which the orchestra wouldn't normally do, would they? So it just pushes you out of your comfort zone, and hopefully some of the music and the projects that we do in Renga help to enhance some of the stuff that we do in the orchestra. A lot of the 20th century music has jazz influence or world music influence, so it just helps to understand that, where that side of things are coming from. And the more people that can get involved with the alternative music that we do in Renga, I think the better for the overall feel of things that we do.
My name is Laurie Lavelle. I'm a bass player and I've played in the LPO for many years. I kind of grew up in jazz as a schoolboy. It's the first kind of music I listened to because my father was a jazz musician. So Renga has reawakened my love of jazz, and it's very good to be able to play it again. I wouldn't say jazz has influenced my orchestral playing, because I think you have to keep them pretty separate, but there are times when you can play with a bit of a jazz style, like if you're playing West Side Story or American in Paris, you can play in with a more of a jazz feel, and Renga has really helped in encouraging that way of playing. I really enjoy the what we'd call the rhythm of jazz, because it's very subtle and it has a feel all of its own, and you can play around, you can be quite creative with not only rhythmic playing but harmonic playing as well. You can create your own bass lines, so in a sense it's very creative playing jazz and quite liberating. And I think Scott Stroman has been able to encourage a lot of people to overcome their fears of so-called improvising and standing up and doing something on their own without a sheet of music in front of them, but he's always been very encouraging, and I've often put my hand up to say, yes, I'll take a solo, and then regretted it, but, you know, it doesn't matter, really. We shall be hopefully going to India soon with another project, and we're going with three Indian musicians and a jazz pianist, and we'll be playing what we could loosely call fusion, Indo-jazz fusion music. And that's going to be interesting. It'll be slightly easier to do, I think, than sophisticated jazz playing, but it has a feel of its own and a quality to it which can give you quite a lot of freedom in your playing. I'd love to do some Greek music and also some Portuguese fado music. Whether it's suitable, I'm not sure, but the musicians, the guest musicians that Scott brings in are always great musicians and are always very warm and welcoming to us, and I think that's what creates quite a special feeling in Renga, is that you're not all struggling together, but you've got some great specialists of their own art, and you have the privilege of playing alongside them and create some great feeling between you.
Music without frontiers. The LPO's Renga Ensemble reaching the parts, well, you know the rest. Plans for the India tour in 2010 are still being finalised with the orchestra's international touring partner, Aviva. But you'll be able to find out details on the website www.lpo.org.uk in the new year. Recordings. Well, there isn't a new release on the LPO label this month, so instead I thought I'd pick out a couple of my favourites from the catalogue. It's that time of the year when you're probably looking for gift ideas, and in my opinion, you couldn't go far wrong with either of my choices. Two Six Symphonies, as it happens, both labelled tragic, and neither exactly delivering Christmas cheer, but instead a profound satisfaction. The first is Klaus Tennstedt's 1983 live Albert Hall performance of Mahler's Sixth Symphony. Quite simply the kind of Mahler conducting one hears once or twice in a lifetime. This is Mahler writ very large in every extreme, one of the most visceral performances of the symphony ever captured on disc. If you've never heard it and you think you know the symphony, think again. It's an absolute corker. We'll be right back. Then there's principal conductor Vladimir Yurovsky's splendid accounts of Tchaikovsky's Six, Pathetique, coupled with the first, Winter Daydreams, recorded in October and November 2008. Yurovsky's pristine account of the first rejoices in a warm and luminous nostalgia. The slow movement contains one of the composer's most evocative ideas, a homely theme which achieves an almost cosmic transfiguration. The Pathetique is, quite simply, one of the best in the catalogue, a performance all the more cathartic for being so contained. A fantastic dynamic range is captured in the recording, and the playing is world-class. So what are you waiting for? But if you're stuck for other gift ideas this Christmas, do take a look at the website where you can find the full CD catalogue, from Haydn to Turnage and Macmillan, via more Tchaikovsky, Mahler and Bruckner, as well as gift vouchers and memberships for the classical music lover. I leave you with some seasonal cheer, the jubilant closing bars of Tchaikovsky's first symphony, Winter Daydreams, under the orchestra's principal conductor, Vladimir Yurovsky. Have a great December, a great Christmas, and do join me again in the new year for a look at the orchestra's Sibelius cycle.